Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland Podcast. Shout out to our friends at Euro Fantasy Game. You guys can read, I'm going to try to write two articles a week there. You can also read work from a lot of previous guests from our podcast, including Enrico Passarella, John Solano, and Chloe Beresford. So today on the podcast, we are going to do our winners and losers from a very eventful Serie A weekend. We have your great Twitter questions as well. And we're going to pivot to the Champions League match between Manchester United and Juventus. And we have our great friend Phil Brown, always one of our favorites. He's going to come on the second part of the podcast to fill us in on what Juve is going to face at Old Trafford tomorrow. We're recording this on Monday. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg. The YouTube channel is going incredibly well, over 5,000 subscribers. If you've yet to check out Alex's work, it's outstanding. So definitely check that out. So Alex, I want to ask you, let's talk a little bit about the derby. It was definitely a pretty intense game yesterday, decided by a last-minute goal by Icardi. I felt pretty good about my pick on with Inter winning. Even though they hadn't scored, they definitely felt like the better team. So let me ask you, I'll leave it kind of vague so you can go in any direction you want. What were your takeaways from that game?
So first off the bat, I feel like Inter's depth finally was very helpful. Sure, Nainggolan left early, but still, they subbed out. Spalletti subbed out his whole, in a 4-2-3-1, his three attacking midfielders by game end, and they don't get that much worse. So Nainggolan leaves, Perisic leaves, and Politano leaves. And I know Inter fans have their own feelings about Candreva, but you put in Candreva, Borja Valero, and your boy Keita. So they really do have good depth. Of course, you keep Icardi in for the whole 90 minutes, and it pays off. So I thought Inter's depth was really on display. But also, it was a great game for Matias Vecino, who I'm going to eat a little bit of crow. And there were some rumors about him coming to Chelsea this summer. I wasn't interested at all, like at all, not even as a bench option. And I got to give him a little bit more credit. He's a serviceable player. He's a nice player. He's never going to be a superstar, but I thought he was very good in this game. Of course, provided the game-winning assist to Icardi. And I just thought he had an overall great game. In fact, in the pivot, Vecino and Brozovic were pretty good, pretty solid. So I was really impressed by the fact that Inter's depth really proved to be useful for Spalletti. And I was impressed by somebody that I didn't rate, Matias Vecino. And lastly, I think we picked the correct striker when you asked on the last episode, Icardi versus Higuain. And no, I'm not saying Higuain is at all bad. I just think Icardi edges him out, and he did in this game as well. So, David, that's my takeaway. What about you?
On Vecino, that's a great point. And look, I was like you when people who was linked to Chelsea and people asked me, I was like, I don't see how that guy makes a difference. He had played for Sarri at Empoli. Kind of see him as like, you know, in the NFL, Bill Belichick would call him a jack, just another guy, someone that can easily be replaceable, so serviceable starter. But he's been amazing for Inter as far as clutch moments. I mean, talk about, you know, he got him to the Champions League with that last goal against Lazio, against Spurs, that huge goal that started the win streak, and then that assist for Icardi yesterday to keep the streak going and, you know, winning the derby. So he'll definitely be in our list of winners and losers. So good point there. So let me take it a step back. I have a lot of takeaways. I thought the choreography before the game was fantastic. I know there's been a lot of talk, you know, with the Juve Ultras and the place of Ultras in, you know, matches, stadiums in Italy. And I've been reading that in England, some players are like, it's so stale here. So there's been a lot of debate on Ultras groups. But when you see what we saw yesterday, I mean, that's really the good part of what they bring. They put a lot of work into those, and that was really spectacular. So kudos to them. As far as the game itself, I thought it was incredibly intense and physical. I felt like you could literally feel the tension come through the TV screen watching that. Really strong will game. I enjoyed it. It wasn't, you know, that much scoring opportunities per se, but I definitely kept my attention the whole time. You mentioned Inter's depth, definitely a good point there. I have to say I'm growing to really like Politano. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Callejon, has that really good work rate, pretty dangerous player as well. Maybe he can be the Italian Callejon. But, you know, what stood out to me is that, you know, Inter's won a lot of games in the last minutes of the matches. They've won a lot of close matches. Some of them, you could say maybe they didn't deserve to win, but this one they clearly did. So Inter was ruthless. This time they were rewarded for, you know, the way they played. I definitely thought they were the better team yesterday. So I had Inter winning in this game, but I certainly expected more from Milan from what we saw yesterday. I guess Berlusconi has been on my mind because he took over at Monza, and I always find his quotes about wanting Italian players with no tattoos and no earrings to be really hilarious. So he was on my mind, and today, by the way, they hired former Milan manager Brocchi to manage Monza, one of the least surprising moves. But in any event, Berlusconi's been on my mind, and Berlusconi used to always preach for Milan. He wants ball possession, attacking, two strikers, a trequartista. What you saw yesterday from Milan was the exact opposite of that. They were just sitting back, waiting for one counter, playing, you know, really defensive style. Now, a lot of people talk about Milan's, you know, attitude and formation and style in the match. But, you know, as far as I know, they only play with one ball. Only one team can have the ball. And I think just saying that Milan completely gave up on the match maybe isn't giving credit to Inter as well. And I thought they played quite well. So this was an intriguing match. You know, when I look at the standings, you know, Inter and Napoli are kind of distancing themselves as, you know, being behind Juve, Lazio, despite getting nothing from Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto so far, or in fourth place. Roma and Milan taking a step back. You know, I wonder, I mean, you could almost see that these could be the standings at the end of the season. I don't want to be a prisoner at the moment. It's something I try not to be, but, you know, I see Inter and Lazio still having a good margin for improvement. I guess Roma with all their young players as well, but I have a feeling Inter and Lazio might be a notch above those. So let's see what happens. Still a lot to play, but in this first quarter of the Serie A season, we are starting to see some storylines that might last till the end.
Yeah, and just to echo once again, David, I totally agree on the intensity part. That's exactly what you want from a derby, and you got that. So, David, we got to do it. It's Monday. It's what we always do on a Monday episode during the season. We had a nice weekend of Serie A. So who are winners and losers of episode 164 of the Calciolan podcast?
All right. So I'm going to take them in order of the matches. So we had the early game Saturday, Spal with their first win in the city of Rome against Roma. Petagna scored off a penalty, but to me, the man of to give him the lead, but to me, the man of the match was right wing back Lazzari, really good player. We saw him make a debut for the Italian national team a while back. Definitely a player to watch. I have a feeling you're already going to see a lot of rumors in January, but at some point in 2019, he'll be on a bigger team. Very impressive player. Napoli, big win against Udinese. Once again, Ancelotti did a decent amount of turnover. He was forced into more turnover early in the match when Verdi came out with a muscular injury within the 5 minutes. Fabian Ruiz, definitely a winner. First goal in Serie A. What a spectacular goal that was. You know, in a way, Fabian Ruiz has been eased in slowly into Serie A. In this match, he was thrown in the pitch out of the blue, and he responded really well. Then we had Genoa put in a good performance at Juve Stadium. Juve was excellent in the first half and then took the foot off the gas completely. But shout out to a few players on Genoa. We had Kwame, the striker, who had the assist when Bonucci and the rest of Juve's defense fell apart. Last season, Kwame was playing for Cittadella, and now he's playing at Juventus Stadium and was decisive. Bessa, who scored off the header. A pretty intriguing player that Genoa bought last January from Hellas Verona. And then a defender, Romero, who came from Argentina, he had a very good game in there. There was an interesting write-up about him in Gazzetta dello Sport today, so a player to watch. Then let's move to the Sunday games. We had Torino, who had a draw against Bologna. They were up two goals. Bologna came back. Santander scored another goal for Bologna. He's a winner. Iago Falque put in a great performance. He had an awesome goal as well. He's about to get a new contract. I'm a big Iago Falque guy. Glad to see him get some recognition. He's a winner as well. Then we had Atalanta, who hadn't won in, I think, seven matches. Decisive win over Chievo. We had a hat-trick from Josip Iličić, who had previously scored a hat-trick in that same stadium, the Bentegodi, against Hellas Verona previously. So he's obviously a winner. Lazio, who didn't play particularly well, had two goals towards the end of the game. Immobile converted a penalty, had the assist on Correa's goal. So Immobile winner. Lazio has to be very happy with how things are going. They have no draws so far, 6 wins, 3 losses. But when you consider again that Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto haven't done much, there's a lot of margin for improvement there. And then, of course, from the derby, we mentioned Vecino and, of course, Icardi. I mean, a lot has been made about Donnarumma's mistake. We'll get to that in a second. But let's also talk about that movement that Icardi did on the two defenders on Milan. I mean, that's exactly what he does, a ruthless assassin. So kudos to him. On the flip side, the losers, we mentioned Donnarumma. That was definitely a very poor mistake. He was shaky in the match. Had Icardi not scored, it would have been a clean sheet that still left you shaking your head. For Gattuso's subs were really pretty poor. This seems to have been a trend for him. So he's a loser as well. Definitely on the losers is Chievo coach Giampiero Ventura. Gave up 5 goals at home, his first match back after the debacle with Italy. Let's see what happens there. Chievo's now linked to El Kaduri, really good player that he had at Torino. I think he's playing at PAOK right now. Chievo really needs to get their act together. If not, they'll get relegated. Roma continues to struggle at home. They have a home field disadvantage, you could say. They've now lost 7 matches in 20 out of 24 with Di Francesco as manager. Another loser is Leonardo Bonucci on the goal. Like, first off, I have to say, I found it really intriguing that he was the captain. I mean, remember on Twitter all that we read and how he wasn't going to be received by Allegri, his teammates, the fans. How can Juve bring him back? This is going to be a disaster. So after a little bit of issues with the Ultras, that was squared away once he apologized publicly to them. I think he's been fairly contrite in the interviews. Allegri makes him the captain. It seems his teammates have completely embraced having him back. Now, Bonucci is a loser because on that goal that was really, really poor, he's been responsible for at least 5 goals for Juve this season. He's been an outstanding passer for them, which they need, but defensively, he's been a liability. So he's definitely a loser of the week. So those are our winners and losers. Now, always winners are the questions that we get from our listeners. As always, you can send in a question using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David. Our first Twitter question is Donnarumma becoming another case of being too good too soon?
So, as I was mentioning with Bonucci, I feel like Twitter really is an echo chamber where a lot of people follow people that have opinions that tend to be about the same or people that cover the same topic. So, something that's repeated over and over again takes a life of its own. Like, look, I thought Donnarumma was bad in the derby. There's no doubt about it. But I thought before the derby, he was quite good this season. He made some mistakes, but so did every other keeper. So did Handanovic, so did Szczesny. Even Alisson at Liverpool had a mistake. Like, those happen. But overall, I thought Donnarumma was better this season. And I'm going to prove it to you. Gazzetta dello Sport, that is the biggest newspaper in Italy, after the match, and this was just a week ago, after Italy's match against Poland, this is what they wrote about Donnarumma, and I'll read it in English. "We have our keeper, and we no longer suffer from Buffon's departure. Donnarumma has passed the negative period. The 2 great saves against Grosicki prove it." So this was just a week ago that Donnarumma was being hailed. Okay, we don't have to worry. Italian national team will be fine without Buffon. A week later was a disaster, and it was really bad. And that's the nature of the position, goalkeeper. That's what happens. I'm not going to write off Donnarumma completely, but I do think he gets a lot of extra criticism because of his contract. And look, maybe it's certainly possible that the peak of his career was his first season at Milan. It's entirely possible. But because of his contract, his agent, how it, all that happened, he's even under more the spotlight because of him. So I'm not going to totally give up on him. I could see why you'd say his peak was at 17, but I still think he's going to have a very, very good career. Maybe it won't be, you know, Buffon level type, but, you know, maybe it could be something like Toldo, something along those lines. You know, the contract was really disastrous, and it makes me feel, man, we could do an entire episode over all the horrible financial decisions that were made during the 1 year of the Chinese Milan. Today, I saw a site, Calcio Finanza, published the letter that Milan sent to Fassone to fire him, and they wrote all the things he did wrong. Man, there was a lot. And the contract he gave Donnarumma is up there. And in addition, that Milan once spent a lot of money to bring in Peperina. Maybe when they signed Peperina, they thought Donnarumma was leaving, and then he stayed. So there's definitely a lot there. But I'm just going to remind people that just the week before Donnarumma was being hailed, we're good with the Azzurri. Who cares if Buffon left the team?
All right, David, next Twitter question, and this is an interesting one. As you always say, Conte brought Juve from point A to point B and Allegri from B to C. Now that Spalletti is taking Inter from A to B, who do you see as Inter's version of Max Allegri?
Oh, good. It's nice that one of the few takes that I got really right is reminded to me. So this is an interesting one. So again, I think Spalletti's done well, brought him back to the Champions League. There's the euphoria of, you know, winning the derby. But Conte, you know, won some titles. Granted, he wasn't going up against a juggernaut like Juve. The first year, there was still Ibrahimovic. You know, we had Roma 1 year, did really well. But Conte won a title, so he definitely got Juve back to where they were. There's definitely a lot of good things Spalletti has done, but to me, he has yet to take Inter totally to B. Now, if you're thinking, who can be the coach that takes Inter to the next level now that at least Spalletti made them into a Champions League qualifying level team? I think the obvious answer is Simeone. Now, I think Simeone would also be great A to B. I definitely think he could take Inter B to C. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, he wanted to stay. Atletico is hosting the final of the Champions League. Who knows? You know, maybe they win it. Maybe they make it to the final. Maybe he feels this is the last year. I do think Spalletti has earned the right to keep going at Inter. But when I think of, you know, a manager that could potentially be an upgrade, could be Simeone. And I'd also be intrigued to see what Conte could do. You know, I always see Conte as an A to B coach. Maybe as he matures, he can become a B to C coach. But for me, his wheelhouse is more a team like Milan right now.
Well, David, I've announced it on Twitter, but I got to announce it on this podcast. You'll be happy to hear. I am finally, folks, Conte in. I am Conte in because I'm also Hazard in for Chelsea. And if Conte goes to Real Madrid, they can kiss Eden Hazard goodbye. All right, David, next Twitter question. Within reason, what do you think Inter need to do to bridge the gap and truly challenge Juve? More stars or more depth?
Well, you pointed out at the top, and I agree with you, Inter. With you, Alex, Inter has a decent amount of depth. You mentioned the subs that came in. You know, they have Miranda as a backup center back. They have Dalbert, who knows what you can get out of him. D'Ambrosio, who's a solid wing back and play on both sides. I think they definitely need to bolster the midfield. So I definitely think they need one more star. I definitely think they were onto something while they were going after Modric and Arturo Vidal. I think a player like that, that would do a lot to bridge the gap against Juve. The other question, though, is, you know, what Nainggolan did Inter get? You know, he got hurt again. I got to admit he was better than I thought when he was actually playing. But we knew he was an injury concern. Started the season, he wasn't able to play. Now he'll be out for a little while. And granted, that was a pretty intense tackle with Bilia. If you watch the replays, pretty interesting. You can take a lot out of that video. So it also depends what player is Inter getting at Nainggolan, and also is Kita Balde going to be the player we saw at Lazio? I have yet to see him dominate a match like he used to at Lazio. I'm a big fan of his. So assuming Nainggolan is back to being what he was and he can stay healthy and Kita Balde goes back to being great, I think Inter is definitely one top, top midfielder way towards bridging the gap against Juve. I think depth-wise, they're in pretty good shape. Let's see what Lautaro Martinez can do as well. But definitely Inter's on the right track. I felt that way going into the season. Started a little slow, but they've been doing really well recently.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Is your mispronunciation of Kondogbia intentional since you are diligent in other cases like Piontek?
Great question. I think some of you might have figured out. I swear to God, I must be dyslexic a little bit. I am actually pretty bad. This guy was like, oh, you're so diligent with pronunciations. Not really. I mean, I'm lucky that, you know, I'm fluent in Italian. I speak it at home every day with my better half. If I wasn't, I'd be butchering those. So, no. The Piontek was a fluke because I read a lot about the pronunciation and I wanted to make sure I got it right. But that's a fluke, not the rule.
Well, you could have just went with it because it was a kind question for sure. All right, David, next one. Should Roma consider making a coaching change?
For me, it always comes down to it's easy to sack the coach, much harder to find someone better. Di Francesco was on the hot seat before the international break, won 4 games in a row, got off the hot seat. That little match against Spal was really poor. Let's see what happens next. But if you told me that you're going to fire Di Francesco and you're going to replace him with Paolo Sousa or Donadoni, I'd say keep Di Francesco every day and twice on Sunday. If they can get, say, someone like the former Monaco card, Jardim, I'd be like, yeah, now that sounds like an upgrade. So to me, it always depends. Can you get someone better or not?
Fair enough. All right. We're going to say this guy's name once more. Should Roma sell Edin Dzeko in January and go all in for Piontek?
So last year I was advocating that Roma blow it up. They did a lot of that. Got rid of Strootman, Nainggolan. Allison was a big sacrifice. But Allison was younger. Dzeko's in the older age. He was really good last season. This season has struggled a lot. I mean, look, bottom line, Roma, for financial reason, has to make the Champions League. So they're kind of trying to strike a balance to have enough veterans to get them at least in top four, but have young players to do it. As far as Piontek, you know, Adam Digby tweeted about it. We mentioned it on the podcast. Like, now comes a stretch of tough matches against tough competitions. Against Juve, I thought he was okay, but he didn't score. Let's see how he does. He's got more games against top teams, so let's judge there. And we also need to see what happens with Dzeko, you know, moving forward. Maybe he gets in form because Roma really needs him right now.
All right, David, next Twitter question is, are the EPL and La Liga really better than Serie A, or are they just better advertised and marketed?
Well, look, they are definitely better advertised than marketed. I mean, I can speak mainly for the U.S. I think ESPN's doing a fantastic job on the app. But when you look at, like, the Premier League, the coverage on NBC is incredible. We all know about the hype machine of the Premier League, so really good. Maybe La Liga, now that Ronaldo isn't there, has lost a little bit of luster. But look, for me, it always comes down to everyone should watch the league that they enjoy. I hate comparing leagues. I really think it's like a waste of time. Like, for me, like, all of us have like an emotional connection to a league or not. Like, you know, I tweeted that, you know, I only feel like a strong emotional connection to Serie A and the NBA because those were leagues that I followed as a kid. Doesn't mean that I don't appreciate the other leagues. Like, I certainly do. So I think, you know, it's about the emotional connection. I think though Serie A is doing a better job with marketing. There's still a lot of work to be done. But you know, everyone should enjoy what they do. But hopefully, yeah, Serie A does a better job of attracting more fans, because I do believe that people that actually consume Serie A matches are going to want to watch more.
All right, David, and our last Twitter question, we're going to move away from football for, how were the Nine Inch Nails shows in Boston?
So, you know, Alex, you and I are based in Boston. Yesterday was really cold. We're getting a taste of winter. It's dark in the morning. By the time I leave the office, it's getting dark. So it's easy to get a little bit down. And I'm just going to tell myself, if I ever get down on myself this winter, I'm going to remind myself of how lucky and privileged I am as a music and concert junkie that this year I got to see Radiohead, Pearl Jam, and Nine Inch Nails, two of my favorite bands, not once, but twice each. I'm really, really lucky. But that aside, so I saw Nine Inch Nails in a beautiful theater in Boston called the Wang Theater, about 3,000 seats. And it just dawned on me that, you know, I'm getting old. A lot of the bands that I grew up with that I consider huge acts nowadays, they aren't as popular as they used to be. And yeah, this was a small theater, but it was really awesome to see a band as good live as they are in person up close. And, you know, Nine Inch Nails, known for being a very dark band, impersonal. Their leader, Trent Reznor, is a total perfectionist. So there isn't much, you know, like human contact and human interaction. And this tour to me felt all about that. To buy the tickets, you had to go. And this was months ago. I stood in line for like 5 hours. You had to buy them at the venue. Got to meet a lot of cool people, some of which I saw again at the shows. And it was like really, really nice. And even, you know, I've seen Nine Inch Nails live a bunch of times. Trent Reznor barely has any interaction with the audience, but you could tell the second night he was like really moved. There was the 29th anniversary of his debut album that day. He had recorded part of it in Boston. So it was really, really nice from a human standpoint. He's not someone that got into politics, but he made a political statement without saying the name of the president where you knew where he stood. So that was right up my alley, as you can imagine. But beyond that, I mean, what an amazing band. The musicians are simply incredible. The drummer, Elion Rubin, has been in the band for a while, is outstanding. Like, my two favorite hard rock drummers, Dave Lombardo, who was in Slayer, and Danny Carey of Tool. I've been lucky enough to see both of them live up close. This guy, Elion Rubin, and granted, he's much younger than they are, he's really up there, really incredible. His longtime guitar player, Robin Fink, got quite a few chances to shine. Kind of like an odd guitar player, a little bit like Johnny Greenwood and Radiohead. Not super long solos, but always puts his flavor to the band. And, you know, Trent Reznor's in great shape. He's been sober for over 10 years, really takes good care of himself. His voice sounds great. He's obviously in great shape. For, you know, older rock dudes, this isn't the norm. You know, I saw Axl Rose on the Guns N' Roses reunion tour. You barely recognize him, and his voice goes out pretty quickly. You and I saw Eddie Vedder. Still awesome, but he does have to take some breaks in the show. Not Trent Reznor. So really, really impressed there. Atticus Ross, who's his sidekick, who's now in the band. They've done all the soundtracks together. Like, the first night, I kept wondering, he's on keyboards, is he actually ever even actually playing anything? The second night, they gave him more of a spotlight, and he was doing more kind of like the DJ thing. And I kept thinking, maybe I liked it better when I wasn't here, when I was wondering if he was actually doing anything. But aside from that, a really, really great shows. I'm really fortunate. I also want to give a huge shout out to the other band on the bill, the Jesus and Mary Chains, a band from the early 80s from Scotland. You know, I was pretty familiar with their work. I'd never seen them live. They were really awesome. I love that Nine Inch Nails, you know, put them on the bill. Their name was on the ticket. They weren't just a typical opener. They had really good sound. A lot of times with opening bands, the headliner maybe wants to look really good when they come on, so the opening act maybe doesn't get the greatest sound. It was awesome. Really, really enjoyed them. If you're into old school rock and roll alternative music, definitely check them out. So great experience. It's been a great run of concerts for me this year. I have certainly been very fortunate. So enough about that. We're going to transition and get ready for Juve Manchester United. We have our great friend Phil Brown on the line. How are you, Phil?
Doing good, Dave. How are you, Paul?
Doing awesome. It's always a pleasure to have you on. So we had the perfect excuse to talk a little bit about Manchester United. A lot going on there. They just played Alex Steve's Chelsea over the weekend. They're playing Juve tomorrow in the Champions League. So you guys familiar with Kyle Chalam? Phil's been on a bunch of times. If you're not familiar with his work, he's the host of the Outstanding Beyond the Pitch podcast, the network that has a lot of great podcasts, and we'll get to that. You can often hear him on Talk Sport. He also has a boxing podcast that is outstanding. So Phil, let's start talking a little bit about the game between Juve and Manchester United. And let's start with this. Cristiano Ronaldo is returning to Old Trafford. He's not returning with Real Madrid. He's returning, you know, with some controversy off the pitch with him. He's at a new club, Juve, that made a huge statement by signing him. So let me ask you, what type of reception do you think he's going to get at Old Trafford? And what's your perception, just the idea of him coming to play as a Juve player there?
Well, he's going to get a great reception. United fans still absolutely adore Ronaldo. Allegations or not, will have no impact, sadly or not, they'll have no impact on Ronaldo's reception from United fans. United fans still remember him with great memory. And of course, he, ever since he's left the club, he's been extremely respectful of United and his time there. So, of course, he went back with Real Madrid a number of years ago, Fergie's. I think it was Ferguson's last year, the year before that, and he scored twice in that game to knock United out. A very controversial game, and refused to celebrate. And back then, he was given an amazing reception. It would still be the same. As for him signing for Juventus, I think it's brilliant. I think it's what makes Ronaldo. Ronaldo done at Real Madrid what he did at United. He went there, he won everything, and decided to take on a new challenge in his life in a new country at a new club, and that's exactly what he should do. It's one of the probably... micro criticisms of Messi for me that he didn't go outside his Barcelona bubble, and I think Ronaldo deserves huge credit for doing that.
Very interesting. Now let's talk about Mourinho. You and I chat about it offline. I think honestly you've been very fair with him because I know how you feel about his philosophy in general, but you're also not afraid to point out when he does things well. I think, you know, in one game he's still one of the best managers, one single game. So let me ask you, do you think he feels the pressure that every time out with Manchester United, it almost feels like his job is on the line? Do you think he strives off that, or is that taking its toll?
I think it would take its toll if we were dealing with a guy who was desperate to succeed at United. I'm not sure he believes he can be successful at United. I think there's been times during his career at United where he has felt there's an inevitability about being sacked or him leaving. United handed him a new contract last year, which they don't really understand why they did that. And, you know, a lot of the things that were coming out over the summer were incredibly negative. He's been quite fortunate in the last that he had Newcastle international break. They got a good performance against Chelsea, but we've seen United do this before. United went to Man City last season and did this. And I think when you see a team that bases its game on who they play and the level of who they play, I think that's a serious problem. And Mourinho has to know that, temporary form aside, that this is not a salvageable situation for me.
So this was a great question that Alex sent to me in preparation for your visit. So this year, you know, we had Conte leaving, replaced by Sarri, who is known for beautiful football. You know, we have Klopp at Liverpool. We, of course, have Guardiola at City, you know, Emery at Arsenal. Do you think, in a way, because these managers are seen as offensive-minded managers, does that even hurt even more the way Mourinho is perceived by the average fan, by a United lover, a United hater, just someone that watches the league?
Absolutely. No question. Look, we evaluate ourselves in comparison to others. And we understand our self-worth and value typically in comparison to others, whether that's right or wrong. But you know, Real Madrid, we just had a conversation about Ronaldo and I had to shoehorn Messi in. There's certain things where clubs are indivisible. Barcelona and Real Madrid will always define each other. If Real Madrid are doing well and Barcelona aren't, Barcelona manager's getting sacked. We now see this, of course, with Real Madrid manager about to be sacked. With United, United will always be contrasted with the rivals. If Man City and Liverpool are playing exceptionally well, which they have been, that doesn't help Mourinho. You know, if Mourinho's sitting top of that league with pragmatic tactics, then he gets away with it. But it's very difficult to defend a Mourinho that is going... Sarri's been at Chelsea 5 months, and he has confidence in his team to go out and attack teams. Mourinho still doesn't have that after 3 years. That's indefensible for me.
Yeah. So let me ask you about two players that have been a lot in the headlines, often not, and receiving a lot of criticism. If hypothetically you could only keep one between Lukaku and Paul Pogba, who would it be?
On talent, the answer is easy. It's Pogba. But probably Lukaku, I hate to say that, because Pogba was at fault for one, if not both, goals yesterday, in my opinion. And this is a consistent problem. United can see goals from corners almost every week. It's ridiculous. And they've been doing it for a long time, too. Making basic mistakes by not tracking Rudiger, the runner. Lukaku is badly off form. He looks like a guy badly needs a rest. But to be fair to Lukaku, every time he plays for United, yes, he sulked the times he sulked last season. I've never felt like this is a guy that is taking the field to prove an egotistical point off it. Sometimes I get that impression with Pogba that he puts in performances to prove a point to Mourinho. And sometimes that's not always positive, like dyeing your hair blue right before a Manchester City derby. You should not do. So for me, I think I would take Lukaku just based on his attitude and commitment to the club, because I think there's a lot of things you can excuse professional footballers for, not being good enough, you know, having poor games, not having form, but you cannot excuse a professional footballer who isn't fit and who isn't given 100%.
So let's talk a little bit more about the match specifically. We mentioned Pogba and Lukaku. Tell us, you know, Juve comes in with a midfield that's got to be a little bit reinvented. Sami Khedira is hurt, Naimer Sean as well. When you look at Manchester United, maybe who's in form, or looking at Juve's potential weaknesses, which players do you think Juve fans should be most concerned with?
I couldn't answer that question if you were asking me to ask United players in a training session which players they should be worried about. I don't know, because you just don't know what United are going to show up. If you get United that played against Brighton, then nobody is worth worrying about. If you get a United that played against Chelsea or against Man City, then the obvious, they know Pogba well. Pogba, when he's on form, is sublime, he's sensational. Anthony Martial has been in really good form in the last few games. So he is, when he's on form, blistering, magnificent. It reminds me a lot of young Nicolas Anelka. Very, very good. For me, you know, those are the obvious. I think Rashford is an exceptional talent. He's blistering pace. So I think you're looking at Rashford, Pogba, Lukaku, unfortunately not because of his form. So I would say the three would stand out for me right now would be Pogba, Rashford, and Martial. What worries me is United's back four.
Yeah, and considering Juve's attack, I can see why you feel that way. So let me ask you, we had a really an intense game against Chelsea, came back at the last second. We had the back and forth between the coaching staffs and the celebrations. Do you think that a crazy ending is going to ultimately help Man United against Juve or hurt them?
No.
Or do you just think it's just so hard to predict with them?
There's no positive to come from conceding a 95th minute equalizer. There's no positive from that. Whatever is said. And I'm sorry, but I keep hearing these weird excuses made for United players that I don't really understand. And I don't understand how they translate in real life. I heard against Newcastle, they finally started curring the last 20 minutes, played for the shirt and won the game. Imagine if that actually did happen. That would be a greater indictment of players than anything else. And then, of course, maybe this Mourinho thing at the end will galvanize United. This is what would galvanize you? Not losing to Brighton, not losing to teams that you should be destroying. Teams not watching Man City walk away with the league, that doesn't galvanize you. But Jose Mourinho getting in an argument with a Chelsea data analyst or something, it's ridiculous. So, no, I don't think there would be any positive to come from conceding the last minute equalizer that they shouldn't have conceded. But I did say earlier that United are a team that their level of play typically depends on the opposition. That United have the individuals to raise their game against anybody. I mean, one, you know, the back four is a bit weak, but outside of that, that's a strong, strong 11. And when they play well, they can beat anybody. But the problem is, you just never know what to expect with them.
So let's talk a little bit about your outstanding podcast. For those of you that don't know, my first ever podcast appearance was on Beyond the Pitch a long time ago. I used to do radio shows with Phil on Sirius. We go way back. So Beyond the Pitch is a fantastic place if you love football. There's a weekly Man United podcast that Phil does. They cover a lot of intriguing topics. And recently you added two podcasts that I'm very familiar with that I know really well to the network. We have our friend Nima Sempre Inter on there, as well as the great guys from Low Limit Football. So tell me a little bit, what made you decide to do this expansion? What can people expect if they tune in to these shows or anything on Beyond the Pitch?
Yeah, it's a good question, Dave, because it is something that I have to confess I wasn't totally convinced of, simply because these are such different audiences. You know, a lot of our content is Spanish language. I assume it's Spanish language content, and people who want to listen to CONCACAF football is a different audience to a Premier League audience. So I was concerned about bombarding people's iPhones and with content they wouldn't download. And then get frustrated with the podcast. But really, the feedback has been excellent. I've been really, really pleased. I don't partner with podcasts that don't have a track record, because anyone trying to get into this usually gets into it for all the wrong reasons. They usually get into it because they think they're going to make money and they're going to achieve fame and all this stuff, and it never happens this way. And then they jack the podcast out for a few weeks. Low Limit Football has been around a long time. Young Roberto Rojas is a magnificent young talent, a very exciting young prospect in our industry.
Yeah.
I think he is someone that we'll be reading a lot from for years to come, and I'm proud to be a part of their development. Joe as well, just awesome people. And their shows they cover a wide variety of topics. They get good guests. And, you know, I really enjoy listening to their shows, so it was a pleasure to work with those guys. It's very different to what we're doing. And as you mentioned with Nima, I mean, Siempre Inter is just a magnificent podcast. And Nima is such a professional at what he does. He's so good at what he does. It's such an easy listen podcast, even if you're not an Inter fan. And look, we're always looking to add new content and with good shows that offer something different to what I'm doing. And if it's good enough, we will bring it on. We've turned a lot of guys away. We don't accept everybody. But if you tick all the right boxes, then we're happy to offer it. And so, yeah, it's football. We love football. And so it's a nice, healthy distraction from all the crap in our lives, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, what you said about Roberto Rojas, I totally agree. Nima's a great guy. You have people and fantastic content. So, Phil, I can't thank you enough for joining us. Everyone, check out the great work on Beyond the Pitch. Obviously, if you love the Premier League, there's really no better place for content. If you love boxing, it'll be right up your alley. And congrats on the new edition. So thanks so much for joining, Phil. I look forward to chatting with you real soon.
My pleasure, guys, and you and I only, Dave, so you're coming on. I want you on after this UV game.
Sounds so great. All right, brother. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. See you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, and that was Phil. Always a pleasure to have him on. He's way beyond a colleague to me. He really is a brother, and I love having him on the podcast. So I wanted to close on this. I didn't put Phil on the spot with a prediction. It's very hard to tell what Manchester United is going to show up. But I wanted to ask Alex his perspective on the game. So, of course, Chelsea just played Manchester United. Alex follows the Premier League closely. Alex is now an expert on Serie A as well. So let me ask you, Alex, what are you looking forward to the most in this game coming up tomorrow?
Well, David, I'm not going to be generic, and I'm not going to say I'm really looking forward to Pogba facing his old team, and I'm really looking forward to Ronaldo facing his old team, although I am. I'll give a different take. I'm really interested to see how Manchester United, the most dysfunctional top team in the world, and Juventus, maybe the most functional and composed and controlled and stable team out of all the top teams in the world are going to square up against each other. You have Jose Mourinho, a great manager, of course, in the history of football, but you have Jose Mourinho right now, who is so unstable, facing off against Max Allegri, who is so, so stable and controlled, and such a versatile manager, too. I know I talk about it ad nauseum, but I love the way he approaches Champions League fixtures versus Serie A fixtures. So what do Jose Mourinho and what do Max Allegri have planned right from the get-go? There are so many different ways both of them can go with their starting 11s. It's very hard to predict both of their starting 11s. So I'm really interested to see what happens an hour before game time. What do the starting 11s look like? Because I think they'll really let us know a lot about how each manager wants to approach the game. I know the game's at Old Trafford, but don't get it wrong. Juventus are by far the favorite here.
So let me ask you this, because you followed them a lot more than me. I mean, I asked Phil, do you think that last second comeback from Chelsea with all the controversy, Phil definitely doesn't see any potential positive there. You maybe see it differently. And the other thing, and again, this is me just watching from afar, it seems like Manchester United performs better in the big moments against the big teams. And I feel like there's going to be a lot of attention here. Do you think they can pull out like a really great performance?
All right, well, let me answer those in the order that you asked them. Do I think the end of the Chelsea-Manchester United game could have an impact? Not a positive one. Certainly not a positive one. Maybe for a different club, a different manager, they'll spin a negative into a positive, but that's certainly not happening with Manchester United right now. If anything, it'll have a negative impact. They'll be a little demoralized that they didn't get 3 points against Chelsea and only got one, so they'll be feeling down. The morale will be low. But I don't know if it really have a great impact one way or the other, but if anything, a negative impact. Now, do I think Manchester United can have a great performance against Juventus? No. No, I don't. I really don't. Yeah, I know it's at Old Trafford, and I still know that Manchester United are Manchester United. They have great players. They have a great manager. They should be able to beat any team at home. But I don't think they're in position to have a great performance against a team like Juventus. Maybe another top team, but I'm specifically saying not against Juventus. Whether Juve have injuries going on or not, whether Juve are coming off a draw or not, Juve are such a well-oiled machine. I love the way Max Allegri approaches Champions League games. So the only way where I think Manchester United could have a truly great performance and come away with 3 points is if Paul Pogba has a truly great performance. Now, Phil already said it. It's almost like Pogba can turn on a switch when he wants to prove someone wrong. I mean, even against Chelsea, he was pretty bad in the first half and then was way more impactful in the second half. That right there proves he can kind of click on and click off. But I really think it's going to take a world-class performance from Paul Pogba for Manchester United to have a chance. And maybe if it's not Pogba, it's going to need to be some of their bigger players. It'll have to be someone like Lukaku. It's certainly not going to be Alexis Sanchez because he is not even anywhere to be found right now. So it's going to have to be one of their big guns. Maybe a Marcus Rashford or Martial, who had a good game over the weekend. But they're just not really a team right now. So that's why I'm saying it has to be someone almost individually that stands on their head and really has an upper echelon performance, because I don't think a team performance of Manchester United's versus Juventus is going to beat Juventus. I think Juventus right now almost have to be beat by individual brilliance, or they need to beat themselves. So I really think it's going to need to be a truly special effort from Pogba, Lukaku, or maybe David De Gea. Maybe De Gea stands on his head and he saves like 8 Ronaldo shots. But I really don't see it happening. I'm not holding my breath. I think Juve are going to win this, and I think they're going to win it comfortably.
Yeah, and they're very interesting because Juve's midfield, it's pretty thin right now. So let's see how that goes. So that's our show for Monday. Thanks again to all our listeners who sent this question. Thanks to all the listeners who publicized the podcast. We rely on you to help us write the podcast and be our marketing department. If you have yet to leave us a review on iTunes, please do so. It's a great way to support the podcast, and we look forward to chatting with you on Thursday.